Good to be with you. Appreciate the fine job of those who already have led us in our worship service this morning. We appreciate that very much. Genesis chapter 1 begins this way. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And the account goes on to talk about what God did in those 6 days of creation. And you come down to verse 31, and this is what the text says. God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. I have one question that I want to ask. What happened? What went wrong? What happened to God's perfect creation that started out not just good, but ultimately very good? And then finally reaching a point, excuse me, that we see today, where we live in a world that is far from very good. It is not merely that it is a world of death and sickness and disease. It's all that. But it's also a world wherein there is sin that is rampant. And a world that is as far removed from what God had in his mind when he created everything as it could possibly be. In fact, it is a world that the Bible itself says, in a real sense, is no longer ruled by God. It's ruled by Satan. Now, Satan is a usurper of God's divine authority, but nevertheless, even the Bible itself says that Satan is, in a real sense, the ruler of this world. What went wrong? What happened? And I'll tell you what happened. Sin occurred and marred God's world. And it wasn't just the fact that Adam listened to his wife, who listened to the voice of the serpent, and so they're to blame for all this. Oh, that started things, but all of us as human beings, we have followed suit. And we have walked in the footsteps of our sinful ancestors. And we have contributed to a world that is far from what God originally designed. And I'm going to talk with you this morning about this world in which we live and about living in this world. As people who are claiming that we are trying to be Christians and trying to serve the one true God and not serve this usurper who has audaciously claimed to have authority over this world. But no, we're trying to serve the one rightful ruler of this world, and yet we're living in a world that is absolutely mired in sin and degradation. And that demands that we talk about some real serious problems then that we're all going to face because we're living in this world. In 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15, here's what the apostle of Jesus Christ says to us. He says, "Do not love the world nor the things in the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but it's from the world. The world is passing away and also its lusts." John says to us here that we are living in a world that is not what the Father designed. He says this is a world that is filled with sin that did not come from the mind of God, but nevertheless, that's the world in which we live. And he also says that this world is absolutely going to pass away. This marred, degraded, world with all of its sin, God is ultimately going to step into the picture and is going to do away with this current world so that we can have a new heavens, a new earth where righteousness finally dwells. But right now, this is the world in which we're living. And John says, we've got to make sure that we don't love it. And the problem is, despite the sinfulness of this world, it looks attractive. It looks tantalizing. There are so many things about this world that just kind of reach out and just try to grab us and try to say, this is good. You want to experience this. Everybody else is. And it's like that lure on the end of a fishing line. It hides the hook. But there really is a hook there. But it looks so good. And it looks so attractive. And it looks so tantalizing. And John says, don't love the world. Recognize it for what it is. It looks like something good. But he says, it didn't come from the Father. All these things that are in the world, all these things that appeal to your flesh, that appeal to your eyes, that appeal to that pride of life, all those things in the world that are so tantalizing and so tempting to you in all of those areas, he says, that's not from God, and they're all passing away. And I tell you what, if we will really recognize what John is saying there and let it sink in, it will change the way you live your life. It has to. Because what you realize, if you really contemplate what John is saying, is that all these sinful things that appeal to our flesh and our eyes and our pride of life, they're all things that are ultimately coming under the condemnation of God's judgment, and the people that practice those things are coming under God's judgment. And so those people of the world that are trying to pull us in their direction and say, look at all these things that are so alluring and so attractive, those people are going to be judged by God for all those things. You don't want to go along with them, do you? We have to see this for what it is. And all these things in this world that are so unrighteous are absolutely going to be done away with because they are so degrading. They are so despicable. They are so far removed from what God designed. And that's why God is doing away with them. Is that what we want to pursue? John says, don't love those things. They look attractive. They look appealing, but don't love. And we need to understand what the Apostle Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 3, where he talked about what's going to be there in the last days. When he talks here about the last days, he's talking about those things that were the case in his day and would be until Jesus returned, because that's all the last days. We're living, Christians have always been living in the last days of the previous era as we're looking ahead to the coming of the Lord's kingdom in its consummation, in its completeness. And so right now we're living in the last days as we await Jesus' return. And Paul says, here's what's going to be the case. Make sure you understand it. He says, in the last days, difficult times will come. God has made this clear. God's revealed this to us. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy. So far, does the picture describe the world that you know? Pretty dead on, isn't it? Unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, Doesn't that describe the world in which we live and the people of this world? That's exactly what you see all around you. He goes on, though. These people hold to a form of godliness, although denying its power. Avoid such men as these. Avoid them. Stay away from those people who are of this world, who are allured by the things of this world, and they want to participate in those things. He says, avoid them. For among them are those who enter into households and captivate weak women, weighed down with sins, led on by various impulses, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. I mean, it is an amazing picture that is painted here. It's a picture painted of the dangerous times in which we live as we're awaiting Jesus to finally return and for all of this sinfulness to be done away with. Here Paul says, make sure you understand what it's going to be like until he comes back. And those people who are in that vulnerable position, they're going to be captured by that. They're going to be captivated by all of that. Other people of the world are going to take them away. This is just what the world does. And so what he says is you need to make sure that you understand up front what it's like so you don't get taken in by it. And I'll tell you the difficulty in all of this is that Jesus tells us as his disciples that we're supposed to go out in this world and spread the light of his gospel. And yet it's a world that absolutely can corrupt us. That's the reason why John said we are in this world, but we can't be of this world. Well, here's what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 10, verse 16. As he was sending out his disciples in just a limited way at this point in time into the world around them. He said, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves. That's a tall order. But I want you to appreciate what Jesus is doing. He is warning them, you are going to be in a precariously vulnerable position out there, just like sheep amidst wolves. You need to recognize the danger all around you. It can corrupt you. And so he says, you be shrewd as serpent, innocent as doves. Maintain your purity, but you better be shrewd. You better use wisdom because you are going out in a dangerous world and it will get you. You know, the thing that worries me a lot as I think about my own life and then as I talk with other Christian people, I'm not so sure that we're scared enough about the world out there. Maybe we don't talk about it enough. Maybe we just kind of have this idea in our minds that, okay, well, I'm a strong Christian. And we kind of pride ourselves on how strong we are. And so it's sort of the idea that, well, I don't have to be worried about those things out there in the world because I'm strong. I tell you what, Paul said, he that thinks that he stands, take heed lest he fall. And when a person thinks that they're so strong that they don't have to be worried about what is out there and they can hold hands with the world and worldly people and it's not going to backfire, that person's a fool. And that's exactly what the New Testament's trying to warn us about. That's exactly it. And we don't want to hear it, do we? We don't want to hear it. And that's what the New Testament writers are trying to open up our eyes to. That's what Jesus was trying to open up our eyes to in the eyes of his disciples. And I'll tell you this other passage too. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 21 and 22. Here's what the Apostle Paul said. He said, you examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. Abstain from every form of evil. Now that's a passage that absolutely calls upon us as disciples to be critical thinkers, to be aware of what's going on and aware of what we are potentially involved in, and to examine it carefully and not just allow ourselves just kind of be just carried along by whatever happens in life or whatever people kind of try to pull us away. Instead, examine everything, hold on to what is good. And he says in the last line, abstain from every form of evil. Let me talk with you about that. Some of the older translations would render it abstain from every appearance of evil. And I think sometimes people, therefore, have kind of misunderstood what he's really getting at here. He isn't simply talking here about the fact that you need to make sure that you don't do something that looks like it's sinful, but it's not, but it might give the appearance of it. I mean, I certainly think we need to avoid some needless way of making it seem like we're doing something wrong when we're not. But that's not really what he's getting at there. The word that is rendered there when he says avoid every appearance of evil, it's talking about the fact that evil has different kinds of manifestations. It's kind of like weeds that pop up in your garden. You know, you pluck up one here, and then there's another one that appears over there. Or you get some insecticide and you take care of this kind of weed that's in my lawn, and there's an appearance of another kind of weed that insecticide that you sprayed, it couldn't touch. It's another kind. It's another appearance. That's really what he's talking about. And that's why other versions will say, avoid every form of evil. In other words, evil things take on different forms and appearances. And so you can't just simplistically say, okay, well, this is a sinful thing. There may be things that are just as sinful. It's just another way of doing sinful things. It's another kind of sinful thing. It's another appearance of that which is evil. And so he says, you've got to be aware of that. You've got to be thinking of all of that. And I think sometimes in our world, we don't think enough about that. Maybe we as preachers don't preach enough on new appearances of evil, new kinds of evil that maybe crop up in our day and time, in our current society, that maybe we're not there in that particular way in past years, but now it's a problem. Maybe we need to preach more on these kinds of things. In fact, with that in mind, I want you to think about what Paul says in Romans chapter 1, where he's giving a list of this litany of sinful things that just epitomize the Gentile world. He says, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil. And then in the list, he says, inventors of evil. Inventors of evil. An interesting statement or an interesting phrase. Inventors of evil. We like inventors in our country. I mean, we applaud them. The Edisons, the Bells, and those kind of individuals, you know. The Al Gores who invent the internet and all that kind of thing, you know. I mean, we applaud those kind of people. And those people who are imaginative and create new things, and a lot of those things in our society are tremendous. They're just wonderful. Look at the benefits that we have in our highly scientific, highly technological society. Look at the comfort that we have that our previous generations didn't have. Look at the things that we're able to do that people in different generations couldn't do. Look at all these things that are good inventions. But, he says here, there are some who are inventors of evil things. And there are some things that are inventions that maybe have a good use and a good function, but they also can be abused and used for evil. Are we thinking about those kinds of things? In our highly technological world, look at the advances in communication. Look at what we're able to do now. Look at what we're able to bring into our homes now. Through cable, through satellite, through the highest technology of communication systems. And look at what we're able to bring in on our computers. And all that is something that can be very, very good. And yet, all of us know, look at what the ruler of this world has allowed that kind of inventiveness to now produce. We live in a society where you can be corrupted by the worldliness of pornography and sexual sin in a way unlike ever before. You know, those of us who are older, when we were young, our world wasn't that inventive yet. In fact, if you wanted to find pornography, you had to go somewhere physically to seek it out. You don't have to do that now. Look at the inventiveness of worldly-minded people who have now come up with ways where this is beamed into your home, and you're not even necessarily looking for it, and then you do a search and it pops up on the screen and suddenly you're tempted with that lust of the flesh and the eyes. And it's so easy to be overcome by all that. And if you think that's not something that will overcome you, you're an absolute fool. And we all struggle with that. I don't care how strong we are. All of us do. We've got to recognize that. There are a lot of good things with the internet. A lot of good ways to communicate with other people. But you know, you can communicate with other people now rather surreptitiously, secretively, with your computer, with your Facebook, with your cell phone, whether it's texting, whether it's phone calls. Look at all the ways that now people are able to hook up with other people and have relationships with other people. Whereas before we had this kind of advance in technology that we've seen in this generation, you had to physically go to places and you would put yourself much more at risk of being found out. It's a lot easier now to develop some friendships and relationships with worldly people that really are not good for you, that are that kind of worldly person that we talked about before, that absolutely is going to be judged eternally by God, and yet you're pulled along with it. It's so much easier for that to happen now. And this is where we need to be shrewd as serpents, like Jesus said. Shrewd, wise, think about it. And not put ourselves in a position where we're going to be pulled away. And not think that we're so strong that I don't have to worry about that. If that's what we think, the devil's already won half the battle. I'll tell you another invention of evil. That's modern alcoholic beverages. It's absolutely a problem. And it's been a real problem, to the extent that we see now. Ever since, in the late Middle Ages, human beings invented the modern kind of distillation process to increase the alcoholic content much greater than what would be there if things were just allowed to ferment naturally. And look what we have invented now. We've got a modern day liquor industry, and God's people are duped by all that. And they justify the grounds of, well, the Bible talks about wine as a table beverage. And it's comparing apples and oranges. It's just like we were talking about in this morning's class, where people try to hold the gospel writers to some modern day kind of standard, when really it's apples and oranges. They're writing in the ancient standard. Okay, it's exactly the same kind of thing. When they're talking about wine as a table beverage and talking about wine as something which is a gift from God, they're not talking about the kind of alcoholic beverages that people are drinking today. Much higher alcoholic content. In fact, what we have in our day is exactly what the Bible writers will be talking about as strong drink that they're condemning. Because that's what people get intoxicated by. And I'll tell you what else has happened with all of this. And Christian people are suckers for this. And like the world has taught them, it's done secretly. It's not done openly. It's not talked about openly because other Christian people who would disagree with that and not think that's being shrewd as a serpent, they would criticize. And so it's kind of done a little more surreptitiously, but that's exactly how worldliness works. And so this whole inventiveness of evil, it creates a situation where that modern day alcoholic consumption, it gets people to do things that are sinful that otherwise they probably wouldn't have done. It makes it easier for them to commit sin. How many sinful things are done and alcohol, modern alcohol, is somehow in the mix. Somehow it's involved. It happens all the time. And it amazes me how many Christian people will allow themselves to keep consuming modern day alcohol and justifying that, and yet they know among their own friends and sometimes their own family members and sometimes their own personal experience how easy it was for that line to be crossed, and they're absolutely intoxicated where there's no question that it's sinful, and they do all these things that cause all these problems for so many people, and yet they're never shrewd enough to say, okay, where did this start? What got me in a position where it was so easy for me to fall, or so easy for so-and-so to fall into that? It really isn't too hard to figure out. And all this, it's what the world does. Inventors of evil, things that absolutely, ultimately tear people away from God. Maybe it's not immediately, maybe it's gradual. But that's another good way that evil tries to do this. Do it gradually, slowly. And sometimes, here's what Satan can do with all this that's maybe the most inventive way of bringing people down possible. Sometimes it's not the parent that's going to be overcome by that, but the parents' lower standards of what's proper and right and wise and good judgment, maybe the parent's not ultimately going to be overcome by that, but the child growing up with that kind of lower standard, the child is then the one that falls eventually. That's a pretty smart way to get that child. To start out by getting the parents to lower the standard. And this is what the world does. This is what the world does. I'm going to close this morning with this excerpt from Psalm 101. It's one of my favorite psalms. And to me, it's the kind of psalm that expresses the attitude that we as godly people should all have. The psalmist says, I will set no worthless thing before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not fasten its grip on me. A perverse heart shall depart from me. I will know no evil. My eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He who walks in a blameless way is the one who will minister to me. He who speaks falsehood shall not maintain his position before me. Now, there is the attitude of a godly-minded person who is saying, I'm not going to be overcome by these sinful things of the world, and who recognizes the way to not be overcome by those things is to not allow those worldly people who already are overcome by them to have that key position in my life. I'm not going to do that, the psalmist says. No way. I'm not going to set those worthless things before my eyes. I'm not going to walk in falsehood. I'm not going to allow those people who do walk in falsehood to be my counselors, my ministers. He says, never. I'm not doing that. And that needs to be our attitude. That must be our attitude. Or else we're not being shrewd as serpents. And we're not going to for very long be innocent as doves. And what it really shows is that we really do love this world. We know we shouldn't, but we really do. I hope you'll think about these things this morning. I hope these things will be challenging to you. Make all of us look at our lives and prayerfully look at maybe some changes that we need to make. Are you here this morning and need in some way to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ? Can we assist you? Why don't you come while together we stand and sing a song of encouragement.